When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Flight Deck, an inside look at the New York Jets. I'm your host, Rich Cimini. I cover the Jets for ESPN. The free fall continues, a 23-6 loss in Seattle, which in some ways was the worst of all the five losses because the Jets had a second chance. They had a new lease on their playoff lives, and they still go out and lay an egg in Seattle. First play of the game, they give up a 60-yard run. They were flat. They were basically over at that point. And so here we are. The Jets are eliminated from the playoffs. It's the 12th straight year. No invite to the playoff party. That is the longest active drought in the NFL. And it is also the longest now in franchise history. And if you know anything about the Jets' history, and I know you do, that says something. That speaks volumes. So as we go into a meaningless Week 18, sifting through the rubble, everyone wants to know what changes, if any, are coming. The wild card, folks, is Woody Johnson, the owner. He's been around for 2 years since leaving for a 4-year stint in the UK as the ambassador. And so he's been kind of quiet, right? I mean, Woody has not made a hire or a fire since 2015 when he hired Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan. He wasn't around for their firings. That was his brother Christopher who did that. His brother Christopher also hired Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas. So Woody really hasn't fired anyone of significance since 2014 when he got rid of Rex Ryan and John Incik after that horrendous 4-12 season. And so everyone wondering, will Robert Saleh and or Joe Douglas be fired? I think that's unlikely. I really do. I don't think the changes will be that significant. Especially in Joe Douglas's case, I think he's less likely than Saleh. And the only reason I'm separating the two is we may have a little bit of a conflict here with some coaching staff changes or potential changes. So that's something to keep an eye on. Do I think, and I'll get into that in a second, by the way, do I think Saleh deserves to return? Absolutely, yes. Yeah, it's been a disappointing 5 weeks. The Jets have basically choked their brains out here, losing 5 in a row. They were 7-4, seemingly headed to a playoff berth, and now the bottom's dropped out. But look at it from the big picture. Take a step back. They still have 7 wins, which is slightly more than anyone expected. They've created an identity on defense. I think it's always important for a team to have an identity. And I do think they're moving in the right direction. You know, from where they were a couple of years ago at 2-14, I definitely think they're moving in the right direction. So unless Woody Johnson can secure a Sean Payton, and I think that's unlikely, I think it would be nuts to start over. I mean, give the man a quarterback and see what he can do. It's perpetual rebuilding. Do you really want to start over? I mean, you had 2 years at Gase, 4 years at Bowles. I mean, do you want to pull the plug and go through it again? I mean, I just don't think this organization is ready for that. I think there is some positive to build around. However, and I say this, however, having covered the Jets for so many years, you know that nothing is really ever off the table, especially with this owner. By and large, Woody is mostly a patient guy. There have been a couple of instances in his ownership career where he hasn't been. And so you always wonder, you know, the stuff going on behind the scenes. If Woody Johnson says to Saleh, you got to fire Mike LaFleur or else. I mean, would he do that? I don't know. I hope he doesn't. I think he should just stay out of this lane, let the football people decide that. But on Monday, Robert Saleh's press conference, to me, was quite clear that he was saying he doesn't want to replace Mike LaFleur as his offensive coordinator. In my opinion, this wasn't just Robert Saleh answering some questions by reporters. I think this was Robert Saleh speaking indirectly to his owner. The way he answered some of these questions, restating the vision that they had 2 years ago about wanting to build with youth, I mean, listen to this quote from Robert Saleh. To me, it says so much.
I think in moments like these, this is year two of a commitment to go young everywhere, coaches, players, staff, everybody. And it's so important to take a deep breath, keep the main thing, and make sure we do a great job with regards to self-scout and evaluation, and make sure that we're telling ourselves the truth rather than allowing narrative and panic to set in.
And I also thought it was really interesting that Saleh shared his own experience from San Francisco. After a couple of years there as the defensive coordinator, he was on the hot seat. He could have gotten canned. And he said, so he's been in Mike LaFleur's shoes. And again, in my opinion, this was Robert Saleh saying to his owner, don't dump this young coach. You know, he's a good coach. He can develop. And listen to the quote. To me, it was very telling.
I've been in LaFleur's shoes. I've told you guys a story in 2018, second year as a coordinator on defense. And it would have been very easy for Kyle to fire me. Very easy. Just say, you know what? We went 4-12. You're the scapegoat. Get the heck out of the building. But to his credit, he sat down. He went over the weeks following the season and committed to me, and the rest is history.
A couple other interesting things that he said about how 2 years ago he and Joe Douglas arrived. You know, they were together and locked arms. Interesting quote. Also about how this organization has a history of discarding players and coaches too soon, and they've enjoyed success elsewhere. I don't know who he's referring to. You're going to blame the Jets for Geno Smith? I mean, Geno Smith, no one thought he was anything when, you know, he left a few years ago. I guess maybe you can say they gave up on Bill Belichick too soon, but we're really reaching into the archives for that one. But I think the point he was trying to make is, he's basically saying, Woody, let me ride this out with my coaching staff. I'll get this fixed. Now, could they butt heads over this? I mean, could it cost Saleh his job? I don't know. Could Woody force his hand? Will Saleh go down with the ship? These are all fascinating questions. It comes up in the NFL. It's the ugly side of the business. Saleh's got a 5-year contract. Would Woody Johnson fire him and eat the last 3 years of the deal? I'm guessing it's about $5 million, so does he really want to eat $15 million? He's just getting Adam Gase off the payroll in a couple of weeks. Does he really want to pick up a $15 million tab? Big questions coming along. I know a lot of fans want LaFleur out. They want him to go out and get an experienced coordinator like a Frank Reich. Gary Kubiak has also been mentioned. Kubiak with an obvious connection to Saleh, going way back to their days with the Houston Texans. However, Kubiak basically 2 years ago retired after a stint with the Vikings. Does he want to come out of retirement? It's hard to attract an experienced offense coordinator to come to this situation because, A, if they come in next year, it's going to be a make-or-break year. So, you know, it possibly could be a short-term job. And look at the quarterback situation. I mean, there's no guarantee the 23 starter is not on the team right now in all likelihood. So hard to attract in a coordinator unless they just have some sort of man crush on Zach Wilson. What coordinator would want to come here and take this over knowing it might be a 1-year gig? So not the easiest thing in the world to replace a coordinator in this situation. You could also point to the Ulbrich situation. A year ago, everyone wanted him out because the defense was terrible. Well, they made vast improvement on defense this year. I think that's also another thing that Robert Saleh could state in his conversations with Woody Johnson, if in fact they are going to have conversations about the situation. So very, very interesting. I've said in past podcasts, I think I've been told that Woody Johnson's been meddling a little bit. Don't know how that plays with the Saleh camp. If I were Woody Johnson, I would stay out of the way. If Robert Saleh wants to hitch his wagon to Mike LaFleur, let him do it under the proviso that he knows that next year, hey, it's make or break, guys. So I do think fans have a right to be concerned. I mean, in the last 5 weeks, wrap your brains around this. In the last 5 weeks, there have been 340 offensive touchdowns scored in the NFL. The Jets have had only four touchdowns during this current losing streak. QBR, based on 150 minimum pass attempts, there are 38 quarterbacks who fall into that category. The Jets have the 31st quarterback, Mike White, 32nd, Zach Wilson, and 37th, Joe Flacco. The only player with a lower QBR than Flacco is Baker Mayfield. The Jets are 28th in total QBR, so they have getting poor play out of their quarterbacks this year. Mike White had shown some good things until Sunday. I do believe he was compromised by his rib injury. He had a poor game. He didn't. He wouldn't admit that he was compromised. He didn't deny it either. I think the Jets are being politically correct there, but it was a clunker by Mike White. I think it was, like I said, when he's healthy and out there, I think the offense performs at a level that could be considered average in the NFL. So Mike LaFleur is capable of leading a functional offense when he's got a functional quarterback. When he doesn't, the offense goes in the tank. So these are questions that the Jets are going to have to evaluate. Like I said, I don't think the 23 starter is on this team. I think Jimmy Garoppolo, who will be a free agent, and Derek Carr are definite possibilities for the Jets. Carr is a better player. He's more durable by a lot. He started like 90-something games. But there's compensation involved. Chances are you will have to trade for him. So you're looking at a premium draft pick, maybe a 2, maybe a 1. With Jimmy Garoppolo, he'll be unrestricted. So it's just a contract. It's just money. Those are things the Jets are going to have to weigh. There have been conflicting reports on Zach Wilson's future. Fox Sports saying they're going to move on. NFL Network saying they're not going to shop him. Me, I think everything's on the table. And I don't buy for a second that the Jets are not going to shop him. That's word games. That's semantics. They said the same thing about Sam Darnold. Oh, we're not going to shop Sam, but they trade him anyway because we, quote, got an offer we couldn't refuse. So I do believe in my heart that Zach Wilson will not be the opening day starter in 23. However, I think there probably is a scenario where he can return as the backup. The guy making that decision is Joe Douglas, the guy who drafted him. He's not going to want to cut bait after 2 years. It would be embarrassing if they trade Zach Wilson for something like a fifth-round pick and after using the second pick in the draft on him. Talk about getting pennies on the dollar. That would be pennies on the dollar for sure. So we've got a big quarterback decision coming up. We've got maybe some storm clouds brewing over potential staff changes. We've seen this movie before, folks. Over and over again, the regime changes. The storylines remain the same. When will it ever stop? And it's Twitter time. I think we set a record for most questions this week. Pretty sure that is because the fan base is pretty fired up and angry. And the first question, at JP Waxer, how much responsibility does the OC have for the development of a rookie quarterback? A lot, especially on a team where the head coach is defensive-minded, like Robert Saleh. The OC is basically the CEO of the offense and the quarterback position, not only the rookies, but the veterans as well. And quite honestly, Mike LaFleur has not done a good job with Zach Wilson, has not developed him properly. Now, how much of that is on the player? How much of that is on the coach? That's for the Jets to eventually figure out. You also raised the question about adjusting the scheme to fit the player. I don't think the Jets have done that. They have tried to fit the player into the scheme. Now, when they drafted him, they thought he was the ideal fit for this West Coast Shanahan-style offense. That does not appear to be the case. He struggles to play within the structure of the offense. It's a timing and rhythm-based offense, and Wilson is anything but a timing and rhythm passer. He likes to go off schedule, off script, outside the pocket, and create. He's just not that kind of quarterback to be within structure, within the pocket. And so there's failings on multiple levels that the Jets are going to have to figure out how to fix in the offseason. Next question from at Yankees Jets fan 1. I have no stats to back this up, but it seems like the Jets defense never gets a 3-and-out. Where do they rank in the NFL in 3-and-outs? Of course, I have the stats. They rank 21st, which is actually low. I thought they'd be higher considering where they are in other statistical categories, but they get a 3-and-out on only 20% of the drives. I think one of the reasons for that is scheme and philosophy. The Jets are a zone-based defense. Essentially, if you want to call it bend but don't break, that does not lend itself to a lot of 3-and-outs. The idea is to limit explosive plays and in turn limit scoring. And they've done a good job with that, but obviously 3-and-out not one of their fortes. Next one from at Double Eagle 1907. This is a forest versus the trees analysis on the 21 draft. If Zach Wilson was so good, how come he wasn't the starter at BYU in 2019? He also raises some questions about the level of competition he faced. In 2019, Zach Wilson started only 9 games, but it was he had a hand injury on his right hand, his throwing hand, that required surgery, so he missed a bunch of games. Zach Wilson was essentially, except for very early in his freshman year, he was the starter at BYU. However, he was in an open competition going into his final year in 2020. He obviously won that job, and he had a ridiculously good and productive year after that. However, as you allude to, it came against really soft competition. It was a COVID year. BYU had to put together a schedule. They didn't face any Power 5 opponents, and Wilson feasted on bad competition, and I think that was a factor in perhaps why he's struggling right now. And the Jets did not see that as a factor. Obviously, they went ahead and drafted him anyway. We talked about it ad nauseum before the draft. At Steve Simon says, why the heck was Zach Wilson sitting on the sideline, not holding an iPad, not engaging with other quarterbacks? Seems like he's checked out, not dialed into getting better. Well, that's a tricky one, Steve, because he was like the fourth quarterback in this game. He was inactive. So there really was no responsibility on the sideline except other maybe to cheer on their teammates. So I'm not sure how much you expected him to do. Did he look checked out? Yeah, he obviously did look checked out. Could he have been in, you know, the huddles and helping and so forth? Yeah, I suppose he could have, but in that he probably just wanted to stay out of the way as well. So you have the backup quarterback who is dealing most closely with the starter in situations like that. So yeah, it's a bad optic, but I think there are reasons behind it. And the next question from at Yesselson, Rich, the Jets might cut some high-priced veterans who haven't been as good as hoped. Who of them makes the most sense to keep, if any, out of Davis, mentions Mims, Moore, Lawson, Tomlinson, Berrios? Well, I think Corey Davis will be released. He's got an $11.2 million cap charge next year. Obviously, he has not lived up to that. Carl Lawson has a $15.3 million cap charge, which is a lot. He's got 7 sacks. He's having an okay year. I think that will be a tougher question for the Jets. It could go either way. Laken Tomlinson is not going anywhere. His cap number is over $17 million. If they cut him, even with a post-June 1 designation, they will still get $14 million in dead money on their cap, so they'd only save $3 million. I think it probably makes sense to keep him, in spite of the fact that you are right, he has not had a great year. Braxton Berrios could be a cap casualty. It hasn't happened for Braxton this year. He's counting 8.2. If they cut him, they save $5 million. I think that one would certainly be one to keep an eye on. The Jets will have some cap moves in the offseason. Next one from Eric. At Eric Klein, PhD. Rich, why does the defense seem to continually struggle covering the tight end position? Is it more about the scheme or their personnel? And you are absolutely right, Eric. The Jets have given up 87 catches to tight ends. That is 27th in the league. They've given up 954 yards. That is 26th in the league. I think it's mainly a personnel issue. And their safeties aren't great in pass coverage. There's a reason Jordan Whitehead didn't go back to Tampa. Tampa felt that he had some pass coverage issues. Pretty good in the box, not great in coverage. LaMarcus Joyner, fast. We saw him run down Kenneth Walker. You know, that took some speed. But not great in pass coverage as a safety. Really didn't play a whole lot of safety in his career. It was more of a nickel corner. So, yeah, it's an issue. I also think, and we can't overlook the fact that teams are targeting the tight ends because the Jets' corners are so good. No one is throwing on DJ Reed and Sauce Gardner. I think the quarterbacks are picking on the safeties and the linebackers when throwing to the tight end in the middle of the field. So maybe the Jets are a little victim of their own success there at cornerback, but you're right, the tight end coverage has to get better. Next one, at GT Hurley 999, do you think Derek Carr is a good fit for the Jets? I don't. He doesn't do well in the cold. What do you think of Baker Mayfield instead? I think Baker Mayfield would be a disaster in New York. I would not touch him. I think one of the reasons with Carr, he's never really had a good defense. If you go back and look through his career, the Raiders have never been better than 20th in points allowed. The last 3 years, 25th, 26th, 30th. So he's always been forced to throw a lot, playing a lot of catch-up. I think he could be effective on a team like the Jets where you're going to have a good defense, and something that Carr has not had throughout his career. So I do think he could be effective with the Jets. I haven't looked up the cold weather stat. He obviously has not played a whole lot of football games in the cold weather, given his background. But I think that's perhaps overrated in some respects. Next one from at J_D_51. Why do you think Joe Douglas has managed to avoid scrutiny through most of his tenure? 4 years, offensive line only slightly improved, quarterback still a question mark. At what point does ownership look at his overall resume and start to question his decision-making? Well, obviously the biggest question is his decision to draft Zach Wilson, which looks like a fail right now. There's no two ways about it. How the 20 draft also looks like a fail. Becton, Mims, etc. Ashton Davis hasn't worked out. 21 draft, you know, other than Wilson, I think the 21 draft has been pretty solid. I think Elijah Moore's still a good player. Vera Tucker is a real good player. And I think Michael Carter has not had a great year, but I still think he can be a good complementary running back. 22 draft, outstanding, of course, because I think Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson have been excellent. And Joe Douglas' free agent moves have been okay. I mean, DJ Reed's been excellent. Some others haven't worked out, but I think he's done okay in the area of pro free agency. He's got four. I think he's got 2 years left on his contract. I don't think he's going anywhere. He's running this organization. I still think the ownership has faith in him, although I think he's going to need to do some explaining on this Zach Wilson pick for sure, because you can't miss on the number two pick in the draft, and it appears that he has. And the Jets wrap up the 2022 season in Miami, Sunday, 1 p.m. kickoff. So much for flexing. There was some thought that that could be the Sunday night game or even Saturday night, but the Jets, they basically eliminated that possibility because now it is meaningless for them. Miami still has a chance to get in the playoffs. This kind of reminds me of the 2013 and 14 endings, both seasons ending in Miami. And prior to each of those games, there were questions swirling around the coaching staff. And in 2013, the Jets played a great game and saved Rex Ryan's job. There was some thought that John Itzig would fire him. They win the game. They're celebrating in the locker room. Everything appeared great in the Jet universe. Woody Johnson comes out. Rex is back. Got a contract extension, although we found out weeks later it wasn't nearly as much as he was hoping for. And I think he considered walking away at that point, but he didn't. He came back in 2014, which was a total disaster. They ended the season again in Miami, beat Miami, but only a 4-12 record. Rex could not survive it. Itzig did not survive it. Woody fired them both. As we noted earlier, those are the last two firings he's made as the Jets owner. And I remember it because I was racing to the stadium. I take a wrong turn. I make a illegal U-turn with my rent-a-car, crash my right front tire into a curb, blow out the tire, try to drive a little bit on it. Not a good idea. Try roadside assistance. They tell me a few hours. So I bail on the car, get a ride to the stadium from another rider. And I think that car remains on the side of that road for several days afterwards and became quite bothersome to try to resolve that situation with the car rental company. But that's a story for another day. The Jets, looks like they won't be facing Tua Tagovailoa because he's got the still in the concussion protocol. So they're going to face either Teddy Bridgewater, who's got a right pinky injury on his throwing hand, or rookie Skylar Thompson. The Jets are very familiar with Thompson. They beat him earlier in the season at MetLife when Bridgewater went out very, very early in that game on that Sauce Gardner play in the end zone, which was a safety. So the Jets beat up Thompson, who's, like we said, he's a rookie, a lower-round draft pick. The Jets have been feasting on backup quarterbacks this year, so they're obviously going to get one in this game. And doesn't matter. I'm going to pick Miami here. They have the motivation. They still have the shot at the playoffs. The Jets season is effectively over, and they're in such a mental funk from this five-game losing streak that I do not see them getting off the mat. I think they will go out with a whimper into what could be a very, very turbulent offseason. It'll be interesting. But no, I am not picking the Jets here. I think they will lose by at least one score, and we'll see if Miami can somehow sneak their way into the playoffs. Funny thing is, if the Jets win, the hated Patriots go to the playoffs. I don't think Robert Saleh would like to see that. You know, a lot of conflicting emotions here, but the bottom line is I don't see the Jets winning this game. We will talk about it next week. We will begin our postmortem on the season that was next week. For now, I want to thank our producer, Jeff Scopin, for doing a great job, and we will talk to you next week on Flight Deck.